All right. I interrupt this podcast to bring you a personal message of importance. It goes like this. In 1988, I met this dude for the first time. He yelled at me in Concrete Jungle, the skate shop in San Francisco he was working at. "Who's going to straighten out those shirts now?" he growled as I skimmed through the shirt selection. Fast forward to 1999, this same guy approached me after our dear friend Phil Shao had passed away and said, "You're coming to work for the mag. Are you ready?" Man, the stories in the miles are endless. Countless drunken nights flapping in the hotel room after some of the most amazing skateboarding had gone down are so priceless, and the privilege, no matter how annoying or bent he was always mine. Jake Phelps won't only be missed, but he will never be replaced in our skateboarding culture that has benefited from his passion in ways that words cannot explain. I'm super lost at the moment and scared of the future. I'm scared of the goons that will take advantage of his absence and scared of the softer side of skateboarding overshadowing what drew me to this lifestyle in the first place. But it's up to us who were influenced by Jake to carry the torch, to keep it lit, keep it raw, and to continue to call people out when they blow it. They say these things happen in threes. 2017, Preston. 2018, Hubbard. And March 14th in the year of our Lord, 2019, we lost the editor of Thrasher Magazine, the hype man, the mentor, the beautiful mind, and my bro, Mr. Jake Phelps. He said it when Phil died, so I think it's appropriate to quote AC/DC again here and now. My friends are gonna be there too. Ride on, Phelper. Ride on. It's skate and destroy, Por Vida, baby. And as a tribute to the old man, this goes out to all you that have badmouthed and wished Jake be terminated from the mag for years, but now are eulogizing him in some heartfelt way to make yourself matter. This one's called Your Feelings. It's kind of sarcastic, right? But it's your fucking feelings. I fucking care.
Ha ha, it's kind of funny, right? Because I spend a lot of my time waiting in line. People telling me about their life, where they've been and what they do, their fucking plans for tomorrow. Long weekend coming up, dude. Probably gonna have a barbecue, right? Ha, well, I'm vegan, so you can't let your meat touch where I'm gonna cook my chicken, alright? I go places you wouldn't go. I know fucking people you shouldn't fucking go. But then again, it's always about you, right? Your fucking feelings. Your fucking feelings. Your fucking feelings. I fucking care. I'm back to start again, right? I want you people on the fucking street. You walk your little fucking dog with your leash, your ball, your stick, your fucking dead weird shit, your hairdos, your fucking spray paint cans, where you tag, your cars. I got a hybrid motorcycle. That way, you can't hear my engine when I'm riding up your fucking Ho Chi Minh Trail. Aha! I got one thing on my mind and I know it's true. I care about Trixie and T-Bird too and Reggie for what we're doing to you, because you're just in the fucking way, my friend. You're in the way and it's all again, because you know what? Your feelings, your fucking feelings, your fucking feelings, your fucking feelings. I fucking care. Thank you. our window table. You get to see everything on B Street. Who's fucking who? Who broke up with who? You can't park there, you probably get a ticket, right? You're in the Mission, motherfucker. That's where we're from. You're in the Mission, motherfucker. It ain't done. How about a cheeseburger? Too fattening, right? Okay, it's gonna matter when you get to hell, right? And one more time, I'm talking about your fucking feelings. I'm talking about your feelings. Your fucking feelings. And dripping sarcasm, yeah, I'm talking feelings. I don't fucking think so. Sarcasmo in all of us. Some of us more than others.
And now on with the show.
Are we on? Schmitty?
Yeah, just turn
Schmitty. Hello.
Yes? Smits?
Yes.
Schmitty.
Okay,
Schmitty.
Fucking
check,
Greg Smith.
Check.
Fucking.
Give it the all cars try right here.
Oh, big dog's in.
Schmitty, what do you think, Schmitty?
He can just pull shit off.
Talk Schmidt.
He's so fucking bitchy.
Shit my pants, lad.
Your Rolodex is fucking deep.
Are you ready?
Come on, Schmidt.
The first time that I met my next guest, I was mesmerized. Bottom of the Hill, about 2005. Up on stage, I've seen him play plenty of times. I used his band for Thrasher videos, and that's no lie. Check it out. We got Eric Shea here, baby.
That's right. I think the very first time Hot Lunch was on a skate video, it was a Thrasher video that you and P-Stone, was it Under the Bridge?
Probably.
It was Under the Bridge.
Okay.
And I remember the next day I was at Potrero. Getting my little backside carve grinds in the pool, and there's Preston flipping hamburgers, treating everybody to hamburgers, making us wait because he, you know, had a very special technique. Like, no, not ready yet. It's got to get a little more time on the grill.
Oh yeah.
And he was like, "Hey, nice song," and I was like, "Thanks, man. I wish we'd given you a better version of it because we've since redone the vocals." And he's like, "Sometimes the first take's the best."
Yeah. What was that, Handy Denny or no?
No, I think it was She Wants More.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Okay, sick.
From our first 7-inch.
Rad. That's so cool. I want to go back a little bit. True or false, you were born and raised in San Jose?
Yeah. Well, I mean, pretty much. I was born in Mountain View, but raised in the South Bay, Campbell, San Jose, Los Gatos, Saratoga, kind of all over.
Where'd you go to, like, grammar in high school?
I was a Catholic school kid until 7th grade.
Oh.
Then my parents moved us to North Tahoe, to Tahoe City.
Oh,
so I did junior high in Tahoe City, where I discovered Mile High Ramp nestled in the woods.
What?
Yeah, I was pedaling my Mongoose dirt bike to 7-Eleven to buy some beef jerky.
No way.
And there's this giant wooden behemoth in the middle of the fucking woods, and these guys, you know, just ruling it. And I like totally skidded my Mongoose to a stop and just looked at this giant wooden U in the middle of, you know, these trees.
Fuck.
And just mouth open. I just kind of looked at my bike and I felt stupid. So I put my bike down and walked over and just sat on one of the benches there and watched people skate until the sun went down. And then I pedaled back to our house and I didn't even get any beef jerky.
So that was like you were 12 or 13 or?
12 and 13, yeah.
And then did you live there for a few years?
Yeah, like almost 2 years. Like
that wasn't the time of the contest, was it?
Yes, it was.
You were at the contest?
Yes, the Mile High
Yeah, no, was it? Terra Tahoe.
Terra Tahoe.
Right.
The Lance Mountain.
Lance burned his board on fire.
Yeah, and somebody threw a cat into the audience.
Oh.
It was a sticker throw, and then there was a cat throw.
Lucky. God, yeah. That's sick to be there.
Just total.
That's super iconic fucking contest.
Life-changing experience. But then we moved back to the South Bay. I went back to eighth grade and finished up Catholic school. And then my parents wanted me to go to a Catholic high school that I didn't want to go to because it was all dudes.
Bellarmine?
Yes, Bellarmine. So I failed the entrance exam on purpose. You know, you had to take the entrance exam?
Yeah.
I misplaced a bunch of Scantron dots so that I'd fail. And I still got a few right, I guess. But I got to go to a public school. But then they were like, well, if you're not going to go to Bellarmine, you have to go to Saratoga because it's an affluent school.
Mm.
But those kids just could afford to get into trouble.
Yeah. I lived in Saratoga the first 4 years of my life.
No way.
Yeah.
From when you were 1 to 4?
Yeah. That's or maybe 1 to 5.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like 0 to 5. Out of the, I was born in Redwood City, and then they just took me straight to Saratoga, and then I think around 5 we moved to San Carlos.
It's a weird little town, but you know we had some good skaters
it's
there.
It's so nice now.
It is. It's, I mean, Mountain Winery. Like, I saw the Birds do the reunion, Sweetheart of the Rodeo there.
It's rich people being rich.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But back then, you know, we had some good skaters. We had Doug Smith.
Right.
Brad Boardman, Kevin Cahan. Some guys I'm forgetting.
Yeah, that spine ramp, right? That Doug Smith skated a lot.
Congress Springs, yeah.
Is that what it was? Yeah. I remember, I want to say a Powell video or something. He had like a little section there.
That's right.
Yeah.
That ramp didn't last long, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So when did you get into skateboarding? What was your first board in the Tahoe, or was it before that or after that? Or
it was before that. It was one of those. I was just one of those kids who lived in California, and we moved to a house in Campbell, and there was a Hobie spoon in the garage that somebody left there,
with
clay wheels, you know?
Yeah.
And so being a little kid, my next door neighbor, Donnie Fursman, and his brother, Doug, they had skateboards, but Donnie and I used to just push around on our knees, you know, like we didn't stand up on them or anything. And then his brother, Doug, was like, only babies push on their knees, and he had like a banana board with urethane wheels that he stood on and went down the driveway. And I was like, well, clearly I'm no baby, you know, I'm 5 or 6. I'm gonna stand too. And you know, clay wheels, you hit a little pebble or a crack or an ant and you just stop and fly off.
Right.
So then my mom took me to the toy section of Mervyn's where they had yellow banana boards, and I got one of those. It was, you know, better. You could roll over cracks and pebbles. And I think it got stolen. I think I left it in my front yard.
What age was this about?
This is about 7 or 8.
Oh.
And then Winchester Skate Park wouldn't let you in if you had an aluminum board or a fiberglass board. So she took me to Gremick Skates in Los Gatos to get a real skateboard.
Ooh.
And I think I got a Gremick Pegasus
is with like a shop board
dinger tail. Yeah, I think it was supposed to look like a Chris Stropel board or like a, you know, like a caster board from the 70s.
That was in Los Altos or San Jose?
Los Gatos.
Los Gatos.
Okay. Yeah. And it came with these like fake Sims wheels that I think were called Centaur wheels. So I had a Gremick Pegasus. Fuck. With Centaur wheels, and I could go skate Winchester because my dad and I, you know, he worked really close to Winchester Skate Park, and part of our quality time was he would take me there and we'd sit on the big wooden deck and watch people skate the washboard and the keyhole and
that is amazing.
Crazy weird half pipe.
I thought you were going to say part of your quality time was him dropping you off at the skate park.
No, he was into hanging out, and you know, he wasn't into skateboarding, but he knew that I was. So
that's where the Milpitas Vans Park was replicated, that washboard style, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I never got to go to Winchester.
I never really got to skate it.
Oh.
I mean, I tried, but I was just this little uncoordinated kid. I remember I think it might have been the washboard, like rolling into one bump and making it over that and then flying over the second one and like landing on my hip.
Yeah.
And at this point, my dad had just dropped me off and he said, I'll come and pick you up in an hour. Uh-huh. And so I tried it again and I fell again. And I was like, I'm just going to go play Space Invaders. So I went inside the arcade and just started playing Space Invaders and Asteroids and Missile Command.
Yeah.
And then my dad shows up and he's like, what the hell are you doing? I paid for a session or whatever. I was like, sorry.
I want to see you rip.
Yeah. So I didn't learn how to skate transition at Winchester. I think it was Mile High Ramp that really taught me how to pump a transition.
Oh, you rode that ramp.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. When we moved there, the only place you could buy a skateboard in Tahoe, unless you went to Reno, was this weird little like plant store called the Watermelon Patch. And it was in Grand Lebakken. And you could buy like your 10-inch wide Veriflex boards. Mm-hmm. And my friend Grant Sargent gave me his old Maharaja 70 skateboard. It was like a water ski turned into a skateboard, which was really nice of him. But I wanted a 10-inch wide board like you know, everybody else had. Mm-hmm. So I think we went there. And I think my first 10-inch wide or close to it was a yellow Santa Cruz street skate. One of those ones that said, now with concave.
Oh.
With like ACS trucks and like Bones wheels.
Okay. So that was about 83, 84?
Yeah.
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 Nice. And then true or false, in 1985, you were published in Thrasher magazine. Yes.
Oh, God. That letter I wrote to Mail Drop. I didn't think they were going to print it. That was when we moved back to the South Bay, and some friends had introduced me to Montague Banks.
Ooh.
Yeah. And, man, it was on. You know, that shit was so fun.
Yeah. We went there a bunch. We would take the bus all the way from the peninsula, like 4 bus transfers to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was mostly friends, older brothers with cars. Uh-huh. I think we tried to take the bus there a couple times and didn't quite figure it out.
It was, I don't know how we did.
Yeah.
There was no iPhone or anything like that. It was
other
like,
spots you could take the bus to Fish Banks. Yeah. And then like kind of traverse over to Memorex Banks.
Yeah, they were near.
Yeah.
And the what's the one? Dell's Wall.
Yeah. That was fun. I love because you could skate Dell's Wall in the rain.
Yeah.
But
Montague was
Montague
the one.
Banks, yeah. So sick. It was usually pretty mellow. Everybody was pretty cool. And then one time we just start getting vibed by this guy who like shows up and starts skating all around us real fast and calling us like grommets. Well, we were grommets. We were just, you know, kooks. We were little kids.
Yeah.
And I got pissed off and went home and wrote a letter. And I was like, this guy came here and started, you know, vibing us and making fun of us. And we're just trying to have fun, man.
Yeah.
And I thought it was Corey O'Brien. But it wasn't. It was some other guy that looked like Corey O'Brien back then. I think his name was Mark Farrington.
Oh, you actually identified him later?
Somebody else did. Uh-huh. Somebody else was like, that wasn't Corey O'Brien, you idiot.
Did you put it in the letter it was Corey?
No. In fact, the letter was titled, Who Made the Cut?
Oh.
Because I was complaining that somebody was cutting us down.
Yeah.
But I didn't name names.
Okay.
You know.
So cool.
And here I am, like 30-something years later, naming names.
How early did you get into music, like playing with a band? What was your first band experience?
I don't know if this counts, but it might have been in third grade.
Really?
Yeah.
Like a full, like three-piece or four-piece?
Just a two-piece.
Oh.
It was my friend Ben Harris on piano and me on electric guitar. I'd gotten my first electric guitar for Christmas.
Oh, okay.
I'd been taking...
In third grade?
Yeah, because I started taking lessons in second grade from this cool nun named Sister June. She had like a beehive haircut.
Dude, you got the best stories.
She was awesome, Sister June. I actually got in touch with her recently. She's still alive. Cool. She's like in her 80s living at some convent.
No.
And I was like, I don't know if you remember me, but you taught me how to play guitar and it changed my life and it's taken me to Europe. And she's like, of course I remember you. I'm so glad to hear that you stuck with it and that it's become part of your life. And I was like almost crying when I saw that she replied to my email.
I hate to say this, though. I've actually turned satanic.
I'm skatanic.
Yeah.
But no, she, so got my first guitar in second grade, my first electric guitar in third grade. My friend Ben and I thought it'd be a fun idea to put on our first communion suits and little hats and glasses and call ourselves the Blues Buddies. And
wow.
We put a set together. I think I just like riffed on like Smoke on the Water, and we like wrote a song together and we played it.
No way.
Yeah, and it was at the school talent show.
That's awesome.
And we had his little brother, CT, come out with a sandwich board ringing a bell going, introducing the Blues Buddies.
Wow.
It was pretty funny.
Huh. But when was like the first like legit band you were in that like maybe either recorded something or played live or both? Or
that was with Mike Prasenko. Back in 91, we started a band called Ozeon.
Ozeon.
Yeah, we were really into like Slow Dive and My Bloody Valentine and Ride, you know, Tony Farmer kind of shit.
Yeah.
And we...
Spaceman 3?
Oh, yeah. Spaceman 3, Spiritualized.
Yeah. That was our shit too back then.
Because, I mean, grunge was everywhere. I was kind of tired of it. Mm. I just wanted to like... make my guitar make beautiful noises and find a female singer who could just coo those heavenly, you know, vocals.
Sure.
And it was hard to meet somebody in San Jose that was into that back then. You know, everybody was really into grunge and punk, and it was kind of a specific thing. And I went to go see, I think, Lush and Ride play a show. And this guy, Mark, gave me a flyer that said, looking for a guitarist into all these bands, Cocteau Twins, Chapter House, call Mark or Mike. So I called Mark, and his girlfriend was like, Mark's working, try calling Mike. So I called Mike, and he's like, yeah, what kind of guitar do you play? I was like, a Rickenbacker. And he's like, I play a Fender Jaguar, come over. I'm like, oh, right on. So I go over to his house, and I'm like, why does this guy look familiar? He looks so familiar.
Yeah.
Because I used to see him at Hoagie Park, you know, like, everybody bring their jump ramps to Hoagie Park. And he was a guy that wouldn't like make a method error and be like, fuck, and throw his board at the ground or like kick the ramp.
Patented San Jose style.
Yeah. Typical Prasenko.
Yep.
And so we're talking about music. We're talking about effect pedals. He's got his phone list on the wall. And I'm like, huh, Joe Conti, Mike Yosifer, Steve Caballero, Salba. Oh, shit. This is Mike Prasenko. You know, like Pro Street, Provert, Prasenko.
Yeah.
And I really liked his skateboarding, you know. I thought he was kind of like San Jose's version of Chris Miller, but he added his own kind of like aggression to his skating.
He definitely wanted, I think he tried to be Chris, like the style was definitely like replicated.
He was very influenced by Chris Miller.
Yeah.
And so after like we jammed, I was like, I think I remember you from Hoagie Park. And he's like, yeah, I remember you. You were that little Grom guy who always used to do stink bug airs. And I was like, all right, well, let's make some fucking music. So we got this band together. We recorded a 3-song demo. We gave a copy to Slow Dive. I think Rachel said that she was going to try to give a copy to Alan McGee from Creation Records. And then the band just kind of fell apart before anything could really happen. But I found those tapes recently, and long story short, like somebody put them up on YouTube and they went viral. So I had these indie labels kind of knocking, saying, would you be into putting this stuff from 1992, 93 out? It's only 3 songs. And it's not the best quality. But I said, if you're into it, why not? You know, people really seem to like it by reading the comments on YouTube. So we put it out and it sold out.
Recently?
Like a couple years ago.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Time.
So Prasenko got a few extra pieces of cheese on his burger that month.
It was such a limited run, but it was good getting back in touch with Prasenko. He, you know, he still lives in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. Because I seen him in SF a while ago. Like, he was living in San Francisco for a minute, right?
We were roommates for a very long time.
Oh, in SF?
Yeah, we stayed friends for a long time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He still plays guitar. He still does graphic design. I don't think he still skates. Before he moved to LA, though, and right after the Berkeley Park opened, I was able to get him out there and take a few runs with him.
Nice.
And he just had that crazy fast style still.
Yeah.
Even well into his 30s.
Uh-huh. Rad. So you've been in a lot of bands throughout the years, right? Like probably more than 2 handfuls.
I don't know. I'm kind of a serial monogamist when it comes to bands.
Yeah.
I try to keep one together for as long as I can.
Oh.
And see how long it could go for. It doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay. When did Sweet Chariot did that start before Hot Lunch or after?
Just shortly right after.
Right after?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was, I think, at the time, Rob from Hot Lunch, our drummer, you know, he was talking about my band before Hot Lunch and my band before Parchment Farm was a band called Mover. That was very kind of Neil Young, CCR, The Byrds, uh-huh. Graham Parsons, kind of California country rock.
Yeah.
And how fun it would be to do that stuff with me. Sweet Chariot just sort of evolved. I always wanted to play with that guitar player, Chris Guthridge. He used to be in a band called Ride the Blinds. They kind of reminded me of Cream and like Peter Green era Fleetwood Mac. And it was just kind of an excuse to play with all these people that I wanted to play with and to keep the country rock thing kind of going.
Yeah.
But then it's since become like so not country rock. Like this new album that's coming out, it's really kind of like British pub rock and power pop. And there's hardly any twang on it except for some of Chris's leads.
Oh.
Just kind of evolved.
Yeah, that usually happens, right? It's like, why play the same album again?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Or like, just try something different.
And how quickly after you got that band together did you guys start that annual tribute, the Sleepless Nights?
That was actually going on.
Or was that already started?
Yeah, I started that in either 99 or 2000.
Oh, before?
Yeah, before any of all, like, these bands that I'm in now.
And what is that about? That's a tribute to?
To Graham Parsons from the Flying Burrito Brothers and the Byrds and his own solo stuff. He was also in a band called the International Submarine Band.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a thing out in Joshua Tree called Graham Fest. And every year, this guy, Mad John McKinney, would book all these bands to come and play Graham Parsons songs out where his body was stolen and burned out in Joshua Tree. And I was trying to get a hold of him, I think back in the late 90s, to see how we could possibly... Because we played a bunch of those songs, my old band Mover. In the dark days of communication, it was just hard to get a hold of the guy. So my friend Ideen said, you should just throw your own in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And I pitched Slims about it. And they were like, sounds good. You want to do it on a Saturday? And I said, oh, shit. Okay. Let's do it.
Wow.
And we got like Beachwood Sparks and Miranda Lee Richards and all these bands to come and play it. And it's been going on ever since. I don't think it's going to happen anymore. I just read that Golden Voice axed all of the old school staff of Great American Music Hall and Slims.
So, ooh.
Yeah, dark days.
What's the guy's name that owns that?
Boz Skaggs.
Yeah, we call Boz Skaggs. Hey, Boz, yeah. Come on, man.
Keep it real, Boz.
Yeah, what the hell? You guys have a really cool cover of Skate and Destroy.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're going to listen to that right now.
Okay.
Because of political belief, it's something in my
How did that come about? How did you guys rework that song? And
I have no idea. I just came up with the chords and the harmonica part, and I was looking for lyrics. And I think I was talking about the faction with our bass player, Doran Shelley, who used to be in the Cramps, believe it or not. And he's like, I remember the faction. Who's that pro skater guy that was in it? And I think I was like, oh, that's Steve Caballero. And he's like, what was their hit song if they had, you know, the closest thing to a hit? I'm like, well, Skate and Destroy.
Yeah.
And then the lyrics came back in my head. You know, it's not a cause or political belief. It's something in my thinking. And the phrasing just fit the chords perfectly that I was strumming. And I was like, holy shit, do I do this? Is Ray Stevens going to kill me?
Yeah.
You know, maybe he'll be flattered. So we just did it and it worked.
Did you hear from those guys?
I think I played it for Ray and I think I shared it with Steve and they were kind of like, oh, right on. You know, I was like, I was a little scared that somebody else would. So I just wanted to be like, oh, here, we did this in loving tribute.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that it was cool.
Yeah.
I've known Ray forever. So
yeah. Ray seems so mellow. Like,
he's the raddest. Yeah. I think he's the one that gave me my nickname Shea Bones.
No way.
Yeah.
I think it was me and McGinley in Canada. I forget. I'm pretty sure it was McGinley. I don't know, but we were at this hotel. It was a Vancouver contest, and everyone was skating at the park. And we were like just coming in to check into the hotel, and Ray comes running out. He's like, I'm going to zen over to the park. See you bros later. And like for the rest of like that year, I think me and McGinley would just call. I don't know if we were texting back then, but definitely like we're going to zen over was like our catchphrase for a while. Thanks to Ray. Oh,
I love Ray. I love how he invents his own words and his own slang.
Yeah. Like,
see you later, Buzz.
Yeah. I don't know where Buzz. It is, but I'm going to zen over. So Hot Lunch, that started in like
06.
How did you guys get together? Was it from the Parchment?
It was right after Parchment Farm dissolved. And whenever a band breaks up, I always try to just start something lickety-split. Like, I'm going to keep the momentum going, you know, mm-hmm. keep the inertia. And I'd always wanted to play with Aaron Noodleman. He used to be in a band called the Men's Club.
Right.
And we were label mates back when he was on Frank Kosick's label, Man's Ruin Records. And Frank had put out my old band Mover's first record, and I saw Men's Club play in a backyard in San Francisco at a party in 1994 95, and they were like the reincarnation of Grand Funk Railroad. I was just blown away, and I was like, oh my god, that guitar player, I've got to play with him sometime. So I introduced myself, and he was a little standoffish at first, but you know, we drank some beers and talked some more about music, and we just became friends. He was, you know, getting into surfing and skateboarding, and I remember saying, oh, let's go to Fort Miley sometime and, you know, skate around, you know, the sunset and hit those slappy curbs, you know, and you go all the way to the top and then go down to the beach. As you're skating down towards the beach, you can hit driveways. And
for sure.
I love all that. And so we had a really good day of skating. And at the end, I remember saying, would you be into maybe putting a band together? You know, Parchment Farm's Dunzo. I want to do something new. And he's like, yeah, man, that would be great. Who else are you thinking are, you know, getting to play in the band? And I was thinking, well, Josh Smith from the fucking Champs, he'd be great, you know, on guitar. Or this guy, Rob Alper from the SLA, you know, he plays guitar too. And he's like, oh, I know Rob. I play in another band with Rob. I was like, oh, yeah, well, then you guys are already pretty tight. My buddy Charlie plays bass. I don't know how good, but he's just a great guy. And at this point, I just wanted to play with guys that were really fun to be around, guys that you can spend a lot of time with. And if they were good, that was, you know, icing on the cake. But I just wanted, like, you know, a group of friends. I ran into Rob at the Casanova, and he said, who do you have playing drums? And I said, well, nobody yet. And he said, I play drums. I was like, oh, you do? He said, oh, yeah, I'd love to play drums for something like this. Said, all right. I had no idea how well he played, or that he played with a crazy kit. With
he
two
was
kits.
Playing bass, though?
He was playing guitar in another band.
Oh.
And then I saw Charlie skating over at Glen Park Station. And I said, you want to play bass in this thing I'm doing with these two guys? He's like, sure, why not? So it was born. It just came together, like, pretty effortlessly.
Is this the first band that Rob played drums in?
No, I think he played in a few different bands. But he's such a talented guy. He plays.
Oh man, if you have not seen Hot Lunch live, you have to go and just keep your eyes on the drummer. He is a fucking spectacle. He's one of my favorite, like, maybe of all drummers, but definitely San Francisco Bay Area, like, of my bros' friends' bands. I like, you know, not to fan out too hard, but we love you, Rob.
Seriously, man.
Yeah, he hits them hard, and he plays with fucking enthusiasm and looks like he's having a blast.
I call it lead drums.
Yeah.
He plays lead drums.
It's so sick.
Yeah. Easily my favorite drummer.
And then, so how did you guys come up with the name?
Oh, we had a show booked, and we didn't have a name. Like, what are we going to call ourselves? I was eating at Tommy's joint, and there was a sign that said, Hot Lunch. And the letters just popped off the sign. Looked really kind of just like striking. And I was thinking about his drum kit. You know, he's got two kick drums. Mm-hmm. And I thought we could put hot on one and lunch on the other. It would look kind of rad. Somehow the guys were into it. It's still one of those things that if I could go back and give us a different name, I probably would. But it stuck.
Quick and easy.
Yeah.
You either have like the 5 second discussion or the 5 year discussion.
Exactly.
Like you overanalyze it or you underanalyze it, right?
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I know. We were dirty in the donuts. I don't know.
That's a great name.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it was, but that's what we were.
Well, you've been playing drums for a long time too.
I don't play anymore, but that was fun. But yeah. You mentioned the first song in a Thrasher video was the Under the Bridge video. Since then, I want to say there might not be a Hot Lunch song that hasn't been in a Thrasher video.
Thanks to you, Schmidt.
I think we do a pretty well job at staying in touch with you. And the minute you release new stuff, we're like, all right, cool, because we got 4 new projects.
And man, that's all that matters to me, really, is to give back to skateboarding in some way, shape, or form. If I can create something that's worthy of soundtracking somebody getting rad. When we got written up in Thrasher and interviewed by Steve from Mudhoney,
yeah,
I was almost like, okay, I could just quit right now. Like, I've never wanted, I don't care about Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
I don't care about Spin. I kind of care about Mojo magazine. That's a good magazine.
Yeah.
But fuck, Thrasher's been with me longer than anything or anyone. You know, and it's like, to me, that was just it. It was
that was amazing. I didn't know that you and Steve were friends. And so when I was doing that interview, I was like, do you think he would ask you the questions we could ask? And then it was so, because I'm a huge Mudhoney fan.
Oh,
so,
yeah, me too.
Yeah, so that was awesome.
Steve's great. He, I met him back when I used to do this thing called the Monday Night Hoot, which was kind of like a folk night. And I took it to Seattle. And I think my friend Jesse Sykes or Barbara Mitchell, I can't remember, one of those awesome women were like, you should get Steve from Mudhoney to play because he does this skate folk thing. And we just hit it off talking about skateboarding and pools and music. And he told me all about the Butter Bowl and the whole Northwest scene.
Well, Steve, if you and Mark want to come on Talking Schmidt, I know you guys probably got tons of no time, but I'm always here for you guys.
That would be epic.
I wanted to ask you, what is Monks on the Moon really about? Because, God damn it, I've listened to that song a lot, and I just need to hear this from you. You wrote it, right? The song lyrics?
The lyrics, yeah. I mean, the band, you know, we all write everything. The band usually writes the song, and then I usually write the melody and the lyrics.
Uh-huh.
I got the idea of a secret sect of surfing monks that had to relocate to the moon, where they learned how to brew their own lager called Lunar Lager.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of, this lager brewed in anti-gravity made them wise enough to warn us about, you know, the Earth's impending doom. And it was just kind of a fun song. I think I was kind of inspired by all those weird cartoons at the end of like Skateboard Madness.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it's just something that makes no sense. But once you put it out there, it's going to make sense somehow. I will say this about that song. You know, I've tried to write skate rock songs, like deliberate skate rock songs.
Uh-huh.
Hot Lunch has a song called China Banks that thanks China Banks for all the years it's been, you know, going.
Okay.
Whether it's a bust or not, it's always been there. You know, when I thought that the EMB was too dividing, you can just go to China Banks, try to carve those benches, teaching me commitment.
Is that recorded?
Yeah, it's on a Scion EP.
Oh, I need to get that one because I'm doing a China Banks documentary right now.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's dude.
Wow,
you're gonna lose your shit.
Yeah,
I just interviewed Arco about him discovering it.
No,
I just went and interviewed Joe Valdez last week about all in behind the ball.
Are you serious?
Yeah, Cardiel's down. Like, oh my God. Yeah, it's really this is like one of my big projects for this year that I'm excited about. For
Jesus, sure. It would be an honor to be in such good company, and you know to provide a song about the legendary spot, you know.
Sick, dude.
So I noticed when I try to write a deliberate song, like there's a song called China Banks, there's a song called Slappy Sunday, and they're good songs, but they don't resonate with skateboarders the way that Monks on the Moon has resonated. And I think it's because I tried too hard, you know?
Maybe.
Like something about Monks just came out so effortlessly and it was fun.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to capture like the driving adrenaline rush of fun, good times, beers, bros,
yeah,
you know, everything that I was into and still am just came out in Monks on the Moon. And I think because it's so untried and non-specific that it kind of worked a little bit better to soundtrack footage.
I love that beginning. Oh.
It's hard to pull that off live. I sang all those vocals in the studio.
So cool. Yeah, I love that one. We've used just those snippets for like interview videos where it's like over and over on loop. Have you had a chance to listen to any of these Talking Schmidt episodes?
Yeah, all of them.
Oh yeah? What do you think?
I love them, man. Especially the Farmer one. God, he's such a charismatic devil, that Tony Farmer.
Yeah.
And
good storyteller.
Really good storyteller. I wish I was just half as interesting or funny as he is. And he kind of keeps you on your toes and he's lightning fast. It's like the Anglophile comes out in his conversation because when you're that deep into British music and culture, you are always prepared for a battle of wits, you know, and he's always ready to fight. With his intellect.
True.
And I love the Corey one too, because Blue Plate is one of like my favorite restaurants just ever. And Corey is one of my favorite dudes. Whenever we see each other, we just talk about old South Bay skate spots. Like,
cause he's from San Jose.
Yeah, he's total South Bay guy. Yeah. He's like, you remember Jewbanks? I'm like, oh, Jesus. There was a synagogue that all the local jerks called Jewbanks because there was this great L-shaped bank at the back of it that people put parking blocks up on. And I think that's where I learned how to do, you know, frontside slappies. Back on a mini Caballero with like tractor trucks and freestyle wheels because rap ones weren't even out yet.
Right.
And Corey remembers all those spots, you know, he was there.
Yeah. Cool. I'm not afraid. What's some constructive criticism?
Constructive criticism for Talking Schmidt. I would say put some women in there.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Noel.
Oh, my God. Come on. Yeah. I mean, there's another amazing musician, you know.
I actually tried to get her to call in for today, but she was a little last minute.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Noel would be great. Tracy and Halsey would be great. Katie Knox. If you can get Elisa.
Right.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a little break and hear from some of our friends, and we'll be right back. Well, what's the worst you've been criticized? What's the worst you've been heckled or like throughout all your life? Like what's one moment that stands out where you got heckled pretty hard or?
It's hard to remember a time where I took anything like that very personally, but it could have been back in the early 90s when I was in that band with Prosenko. And somebody said, you guys aren't even a real band. You're just living in Four Track City because we never played live.
Oh.
And I was like, fuck you.
Well, speaking of heckling, we're going to listen to a song that I've really been enjoying lately called The Ballad of Heckle Hill.
City. build us all a park to skate. Oregon wizards came to town and dug a hole into our ground. Fences raised, the locals barge. For 1 week they let us charge. But we knew there'd come a day when dues were not enough to pay. This was once La Raza Park. The northerners did cite. Who are we to take the land for barbecues and fights? One by one the walls were stained with scribble tags of death and pain. Wheels damp to slip and slide on broken glass and painting dry. Coping's dead, the park is stained. Beer and piss and smells contained. Rolling geezers slip and fall. Damn old soul scream.
All about, is this all Timo or is this a collective effort of dudes on the hill at Petrero?
Oh yeah, just all the ghosts of Heckle Hill show up in this song, you know. Timmy Jack.
Oh yeah.
That weird old guy Mike that used to bring his dog. God, who else? Yeah, Timo.
Is that guy's name that Collinson used to beat up? I forget his name.
New City.
Yeah.
God. Just all the lurkers.
Uh-huh.
All the hecklers. I just spent so much time at Potrero when it first came to us, you know. You just get to know these characters and somehow they end up in your songs, whether you like it or not.
That's really cool.
And who was the one, this older, kind of younger guy, he ran with that kind of 70s SF crew, like Joe Fong. Ipe, I think.
Ipe, yeah. He showed up at Thrasher with a baseball bat one morning.
Are you serious?
Yep. That is a true story.
So yeah, like all those dudes, you know, like all the characters of Potrero and the hill that they heckle on.
What's the proudest music moment you've had?
Wow. Other than being interviewed by Steve Turner and Thrasher?
I was thinking more along the lines of the Z-Boys, but...
That definitely. I mean, to have guys who you pinned pictures up on your wall and taped pictures in your locker and... You'd open skateboarder magazines and see like Shogo Kubo,
yeah,
Tony Alva, Jay Adams, Marty Grimes.
Yeah,
you know, when I heard that Z-Flex was interested in putting us in a documentary about their team, I was just floored. When I heard they just wanted us and no other band, I was confused, but I didn't want to look a gift horse in the mouth.
Uh huh.
I mean, part of me wanted to be like, well, you should get the Shrine in there. I mean, they're from Venice fucking Beach, yeah. You know? And I think I did. I was like, is anybody else going to be in this? Like the Shrine or Zigzags? And they're like, no, they kind of want to keep it, you know, consistent. Is that cool? And I was like, oh God, yeah, that's cool.
Insane.
And they sent us like a box of like.
So what, like one of the guys heard you guys and was like, oh, this will be perfect for the movie? Or was it more than that?
I think it was Tim from Australia, who's tight with that crew. And he's an old schooler guy. He's got an amazing guitar shop. He's put out like an Earthless pedal before for Isaiah.
Oh.
And every time I think Earthless goes to Australia, they play at Tim's shop.
Sick.
Yeah. He's just an amazing, wonderful human being.
So he's at home watching Under the Bridge and all of a sudden Hot Lunch comes up on the screen and he's like, wait a minute.
Maybe something like that happened. I can't remember who turned him on to our music. It might have been Isaiah and Mario and Mike.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, I remember just learning that he was putting us in touch with the Z-Flex guys and they were into it. And I was just, I couldn't believe it. So I still can't believe it.
So, but you didn't write any music for that. It was already written and they took your already written songs. Is
yeah,
that right?
Yeah, it was just ready made.
Okay.
And it fit perfect.
God, that is an amazing. And then you got to be an extra in the movie as well, right?
Yeah. In the Lords of Dogtown. That was because a friend of mine who worked in Central Casting, you know, back in the early 2000s, I was really into just, I found out that there was this thing called eBay and you could find old skateboards on it.
Oh.
And so I would like get like old Logan Earth skis and put them together and learn how to like, ride like my hero. I wanted to learn how to ride like my heroes, you know. And so she said, hey, you skate like old 70s boards and pools, you should come to this casting call. And I was like, all right, it's in Los Angeles. And I went and I skated for them and they said, all right, we want you to skate in the movie. Where's your Screen Actors Guild credentials? And I was like, my what now? And they're like, oh, don't worry, it'll just cost you $2,000 to join. I was like, I don't have $2,000.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we got the look. You got the style. We like you. Why don't you just be an extra? We'll pay you like $300 or $400 a day to pump a keg full of fake beer and smoke fake weed in the surf shop and dance to TVI with the Nuge.
And you don't need the Actors Guild for that?
No, because I didn't have any speaking lines and I wasn't going to be actually performing athletics.
I would have said, front me the guild card, and then I need $10,000 on top of that, and then we good.
But I got to meet the Nuge from that.
Yeah, he's sick.
He's such a rad guy. Yeah. And I got to skate with TA at Pedro.
How did you mesh with him?
He just showed up. But I saw this.
Did he talk to you at all? Or?
Yeah, we hung out.
Uh-huh.
He showed up in a SUV with an Alva sticker on it, and I was like, oh, fuck. This is either going to be rad or it's going to suck.
Mm-hmm. Don't meet your heroes.
Exactly. That's the mantra that was playing in my head, and I was trying not to think about it. Mm-hmm. But I'm fucking glad I met him because, man, we talked and we skated, and he was so cool.
My Tony Alva experience is a little different.
What was that?
Somebody McKenny actually hit me up. He's like, you and Tony Alva got beef? And I was like, no. What happened was we were at the Vans Park Series and Tony was there skating and I'm filming the whole thing. And I come up to him. I was like, hey, cool if I get a photo? Like I asked first. And he's like, no. And he drops in. Somehow I think it got word to Naracco. And then Naracco came over and interviewed me and was like, so what's up? I heard Tony frosted you or something. And they made it like kind of a big deal where I think it aired on the TV because were. And so people start being like, whoa, Schmitty and TA have beef. So that was a pretty funny one. But I thought, amazingly, I went to a Guns N' Roses reunion tour at AT&T. Got the hookup and we had really close seats and fucking Axl came out with an Alva shirt on and everyone was kind of like, not like you said, not knowing how to feel about it. And I was like, fuck, that's rad, dude.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people are going to be like, what's that all about? And then they're going to look up Alva and be like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I should buy a shirt.
And Axl's notorious for like NWA, all these cool shirts, like throughout his whole career.
Yeah.
The Charles Manson. Right? Oh, how often do you get that?
Too often, man.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. I either get Jesus Christ or Charles Manson.
Oh.
And when I tell people, well,
both ends of the spectrum.
Jesus Christ wasn't white, they get really mad.
Oh.
And then when I tell people, well, Charles Manson was actually a pretty good singer-songwriter, they get really mad.
But he had a tattoo on his forehead. You don't have that.
I don't. Or do you make them? I have put that X on my forehead on Halloween because it's just so easy to put on bell bottoms and put an X on your head and go out as Charlie Manson.
Uh-huh.
And like, fine, that's easy, you know?
Right.
And people seem to lose their shit. But I stopped doing that because I realized, you know what? Too many people like Charlie Manson. Fuck that. Halloween's supposed to be scary. This costume's supposed to scare people.
Yeah.
I don't want people coming up and taking selfies with me.
Yeah.
I don't like being Charlie Manson. I'm not going to be Charlie Manson anymore.
Yeah. The thing about Charles Manson is he died.
Yeah.
And no city would let them bury him there.
Good.
Yeah. So I think they had to cremate him and maybe he's in a, I don't know where he is, but I know that the city he's from, the city he was in jail, every city said, nah, 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 we don't want his people coming here.
There's a great podcast called You Must Remember This.
Uh-huh.
And they do a Charlie Manson episode that talks about everything orbiting around the murder, around his cult.
Whoa.
And at the end of the day, my big takeaway, that guy was just another kook who wanted to be a rock star.
He never killed anyone.
Well, no, he actually, I think he shot somebody.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, it goes into that.
I'm fascinated. Like, if it's a fucking whatever murder mystery, or what are they called? True crime series?
Yeah, yeah.
Plug me in. I'll binge watch the fuck out of it. The Bundy tapes, Mindhunter, all those things. I am fascinated.
Listen to this then, because I think it'll dispel the mythology and mystery around the impetus of the Manson family, the Manson motive and the Manson murder.
Uh-huh.
He just wanted to be a rock star. Yeah. He wanted to be a famous rock star. That deal fell through. So he was going to go get revenge on the people in the music industry that couldn't make him a big famous rock star. And he got the wrong people.
Well, Beatles did Helter Skelter.
Yeah, that's right. Some people consider that the very first heavy metal song.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And if you think about like the difference between hard rock and heavy metal, this is going to get a little geeky here now.
I like it.
My friend Diego and I were talking about how hard rock can be classified as something that's still rooted in the blues.
Sure.
Like Blue Cheer.
Okay.
Heavy metal is still loud and hard and driving, but no blues.
Oh.
So Helter Skelter arguably could be the first heavy metal song because it's a heavy, hard, driving, loud song that doesn't have... It's not rooted in the blues in a very obvious way, like Summertime Blues by Blue Cheer.
I was always told that heavy metal started because Black Sabbath's guitarist had metal fingers.
I've heard that too, because Tony Iommi sliced off his two middle fingers and had to wear like these thimbles.
Right.
And then those two strings that those fingers touched were thinner.
And it made that sound, and that was heavy metal.
I like that.
I think everybody
better.
Has a, you know,
yeah.
Mark Gonzalez versus Nodis. We don't know who did the first handrail, really, do we?
Enough with the hard claims.
Yeah.
You know?
But speaking of music, I forgot. This is a great question here. And we tie it in with our past guest, Mr. Farmer. He's really adamant about this Aerosmith being the best American band of all time.
I heard
and,
that.
And there's, you know, there's some stipulations. It can't be Jimi Hendrix. It can't be Bob Dylan. It has to be a band name.
Right.
So those people are out. But, you know, I was wondering your take on this.
I see. I can see why he would say that. Aerosmith are an incredible band, mm-hmm. especially the early stuff. Hell, I'll even play some stuff from Honkin' on Bobo. Mm-hmm. And that's the worst thing you could ever name an album. Honkin' on Bobo, what the fuck? But you know, those guys were called like the American Stones,
yeah,
a bit hyperbolic. But you know, I love Aerosmith, but I beg to differ. I think the best American band for me would be a three-way tie between the Byrds, Grand Funk Railroad, and MC5.
You guys kind of use MC5 as an influence heavy, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I've got MC5 tattooed on my arm.
Yeah, they're no joke.
I love MC5.
Sure.
But I don't know, this whole, and living music and working in music, I've kind of gotten over the whole, like, the best this or the best that.
Yeah.
I don't know who said, like, comparison is the thief of joy, but that seems to resonate with me a lot more these days.
Yeah, that is interesting. Because Toad was all about Van Halen, and then he named his daughter Halen, and then he had a son, and I was like, you named it what? It should have been Van, duh. Oh
my God, that would have been perfect.
Yeah, and I think he was on board, but maybe, I don't know. All right, let's get to 2019, some serious shit here.
Okay.
What the fuck is up with San Francisco, and what can we do about this?
God, I don't know, man. You know...
Do we like these motorized scooters and the unicycle guys flying around everywhere? There's motorized skateboards flying up hills going 40 miles an hour,
Jesus.
But we can't push down the street safely. I don't understand it.
I'm just going to go on record to say I would rather see motorized scooters than motorized skateboards.
Yeah.
You know?
I think so too. It makes more sense anyway. Yeah. I hate the briefcase, helmet, and remote control finger guy looking at me while I'm driving my car. Cause I'm like, I just want to say, dude, I need glasses and I can't see that well. And I'm sorry I ran you over. Like, it just wasn't my fault. You know?
God damn it. We built the city on rock and roll.
And who's the worst though? Out of all those, you got the uni-wheel guy, which yeah. is that guy comes out of our elevator in the morning. And I haven't even had my coffee yet, dude. That shit sucks.
It can ruin your whole day, man. Yeah,
it really does. Can. But we got the uni-wheel guy. We got motorized scooter, motorized skateboard. I think those are top three worst dudes right now.
And as a skateboarder, it's hard not to take this shit personally.
Yeah.
It just is. No matter how good you are or like me, how bad you are, if you belong to skateboarding, you know, it's easy to take that shit personally and to think that like, these fuckers are trolling us, you know, but they're just doing their thing. I get it. You know, not everybody can be tuned in. And, but it's just, it's sad. It might be a straw on the camel's back, you know, that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, we got rising rents, we got evictions, we got homeless, and we got these guys. I think the challenge now is to like find the cool pockets of San Francisco that still exist and make them your home.
It's getting trickier. The mm-hmm. avenues seem like they're kind of a little bit of a magnet for that. One other guy that pisses me off. We're pissed off right now.
Sure.
But we're on coffee and we're happy actually. But how about the guy that's like, I want to move to San Francisco. Fuck, the Mission's cool. What if I move next door to the makeout room? Okay, I'm going to buy that place. Hey, it's kind of loud. I want the makeout room not to have night shows anymore. Let's put the bottom of the hill out of business. Like, why the fuck did you move into that neighborhood? It's like moving next to a hospital and saying the sirens are bugging you. I mean, come on.
That's the irony. It's like, why did you want to move to San Francisco in the first place?
Yeah, you wanted to be cool.
You wanted to be cool. You wanted to be around culture. You wanted to be around art. You wanted to be around music. And now taking all of that away from the city.
This is our first segment of this type. I don't usually do this often, but I think you could appreciate where I'm coming from.
Yeah, man. I moved to the city in 94. I've been coming up here all my life. I'm a California boy. I've born and raised in the Bay Area, and I'm trying to make my peace with it in some regards. In other regards, you know, maybe it's just time to move on.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I'm reminded of those lyrics in Tom Sawyer by Rush, where he says he knows changes aren't permanent, but change is.
Oh.
Change is permanent.
And his mind is not for rent. So remember that. You moved to Oakland, though.
Yeah.
And that was like, what is that now? Five years?
I think it's been like 7 or 8 years.
Whoa. And now you're heading out to the Falcon Land of Athens, Georgia.
Athens, Georgia.
Wow. Yeah. That's REM, right?
REM, B-52s, Olivia Tremor Control,
ooh.
Drive-By Truckers.
Oh, wow.
Of Montreal.
If you see Michael Stipe, just tell him, how you doing?
Yeah.
Actually, my uncle's friend was in REM as a backup guitarist.
Peter Holzapfel?
No, his name's Scott McCoy.
Oh, really?
He's in the Young Fresh Fellows.
No way.
Yeah.
That's, oh, wow, small world.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm going to be back so much nobody's going to recognize or realize that I've moved.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how's that going to affect the band and stuff?
Long distance relationship. I'll probably be back once every month for at least 2019 and most of 2020.
Can we look forward to some East Coast tours then?
I think so. I'd like to finally do that. We've played Europe and we've never played the East Coast.
Really?
Yeah, we played Europe twice, never played the East Coast once.
Yeah, like I was telling you, the skate rock trip, we flew into Atlanta. The first night was Athens. Then we went to North Carolina, went up the coast and ended in New York.
Yeah.
It's a great one. I mean, you hit New York, Philly, Baltimore. There's some epic cities. And what we didn't do, which you could, is keep going into Providence, hit Rhode Island, and in that little area. I've never even been to that zone, but that's definitely next on my list. But it's a really cool tour.
East Coast circuit is the best. I did it with Parchman Farm and the fucking Champs back in the early 2000s, and everything's so close to each other. And the pulled pork sandwiches are the best.
So what are you going to do? What are your future goals? You're going to stick – you're working for Pandora.
Yes.
And you're going to transfer out there and continue to work for Pandora.
Yeah, we have an office in Atlanta, and I'm going to make my new home in Athens.
Oh, and work in Atlanta?
Yeah, go back and forth to the Atlanta office, maybe work from home once or twice a week.
Sick.
You know, just try that kind of, maybe this is my version of a midlife crisis, you know. I'll be 50 in a couple of years.
I've had five of those so far.
Yeah. I've had a quarter life crisis.
I mean, just this week. It's been like, fuck.
I don't know. I just want to try something new. I want to uproot myself.
Dude, more power to you.
It feels like an opportunity. Like, I got to try it.
Make sure that you have a lot of water because you're going to take showers a lot more often there. The humidity will get you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not the heat. It's the humanity.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, shit. But Atlanta's kind of like the new Hollywood. They're filming, like, all this stuff down there nowadays. Like, that's where they do it all.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I'm super stoked that we finally – our paths crossed. It's been a minute since I've seen you. And you were one of the first people I thought of when I started on this venture. People may think differently, but I'm not really comfortable socializing too much. And this is good for that. And then I also get to have an excuse to say, hey, let's spend an hour together and talk.
Oh, and not only that, but it kind of extends Epically Trife in a different way.
Oh.
You know, like listening to your podcasts,
yeah.
It's like I'm getting so nostalgic for Trife Life, which wasn't that far away, but then it kind of is, you know?
You've always been so supportive with that stuff. And were you at the Trife party?
Which one?
It was the first anniversary we did at the Parkside, and me and Drehobel and Preston, and I think Becker made a, what do you call it? A wheel of misfortune.
That sounds familiar.
And Damasik and Hightower played?
Yeah. I think that was the first time I saw Damasik.
Okay. Because that was, I mean, if I'm patting myself on the shoulder ever, I might have to do it there. That party went off and people still talk about it. It was so sick. Damasik came out in it was snowing. Their flights were delayed. Logan's calling me from Boston, like, we're going to make it. Don't worry. Like, and I had never even met them yet. And then they were just the raddest dudes ever, like bros for life, like instantly.
Yeah.
I've never really had that before. And I really do mean it with those guys that, like, because we had so many friends of friends, I think the comfort zone, but we really were like hugging Wybus, high-fiving Logan, like before we even said hi for the first time, which was really cool. But the Wheel of Misfortune,
yeah,
we put like Jaeger bomb, fucking like just the five shots of stupid or whatever, and then you put $5 down and spin it, and it would be like, oh no.
Oh my God. Those days, I just remember like at some, you know, it's a good party when Tracy ends up on the floor, usually straddling Katie Knox,
yeah,
or wrestling Halsey.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, okay, this is happening.
Yeah,
this is trife life.
They really loved to have fun. And Halsey, I miss so much because she was basically the one person I could count on that was like, hey, this band's playing, and she was down.
Oh yeah,
and she actually would say it more times to me than I'd say it to her, because she knew more about music, which was rad, because I got to, you know, experience some new bands and stuff and then meet people. And that was a really special time. Josie was killing it with like black and white photos, really contrasty.
One of my favorite photographers, man. She's just got the eye.
Yeah.
Just a magic woman.
And Trohobel and I and McGinley and Becker were in real good pile out form. I stopped drinking, but I feel like I drank a lot back then.
You drank more than most people?
Yeah.
I mean, not like quantity, but you lived more than, what I'm trying to say is you lived more than most people.
Oh yeah, it was wild. My current girlfriend, she just like always, because now I fall asleep at 10, so it's interesting. But enough about that. Really good catching up with you, Eric.
Likewise.
And I just want to say, you're all right.
Thank you, Schmitty.
Cheers. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please subscribe now on Anchor, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you like this show, one of the best ways to show some love is to write up a review. I always appreciate to hear your thoughts, and detailed reviews are the best way for people to discover us. Also, a big shout out to our executive director, Cheryl Camisa.
Shout out.
Love it.